I do not care for infants, and even if I did, I should not care for this one. It is decidedly moist, I protested to Stoker, thrusting the child towards him. He took it with good grace, and it emitted a sort of cooing sound. It seems to like you, I observed. I could not find fault with the child on that score. From his thirst for adventure to his avid intelligence, Stoker was an eminently likable man when he was in good spirits. The fact that he was superbly fit and partial to reciting Keats in moments of tenderness entered into my assessment of him not in the slightest. I am, after all, a woman of science. Stoker dandled the infant on his knee, and it regarded him solemnly, eyes wide and round. I use the word infant in its loosest interpretation. It had, in fact, been born some 9 or 10 months before, and possessed the appropriate number of teeth and skills for a child of that age. If we had permitted, it would have roamed the first-class compartment where we were comfortably ensconced en route from Paris to London. The fact that the journey included a channel crossing via boat train was one of a dozen considerations in bringing along the child's nurse, a stout matron of something more than 40 years. She was a calmly capable woman who managed her charge with a combination of ruthless efficiency and dollops of real affection. I had taken the precaution of purchasing leather leads to attach to the infant to prevent it from getting loose, but Madame Laborde assured me she was entirely capable of running it to ground should it escape. Escape seemed the last thing on its mind as it wound its chubby fist around Stoker's index finger. As usual, the digit in question was stained with ink and smelt of honey and tobacco, thanks to Stoker's inveterate habits. We had been in the child's company for only a few hours, but it had already ascertained that Stoker's pockets were a veritable hoard of sweets. It put out an imperious hand, and Stoker shook his head.
You have had two already, and you must eat your luncheon first.
The small person, I relate without exaggeration, narrowed its eyes and drew in a slow, deep breath. Then it opened its little maw and bellowed like a tiny bull. Hastily, Stoker thrust a hand into his pocket, rootling about until he extracted a paper twist of honey drops. He plopped one into the child's mouth, just as it prepared to roar again. Instantly, the rosebud lips clamped shut and curved into a smile. It emitted another coo, and the nurse sighed.
Monsieur, she said evenly, you must not spoil the child. He is headstrong enough without being indulged.
She related this in French, as her English was poor, and Stoker shrugged, pantomiming that he did not understand the language. This was a patent falsehood. I had discovered him on numerous occasions reading saucy French novels in the original tongue. He claimed it made them more romantique. I smiled at the nurse. Madame, I told her in her native language, you must excuse Monsieur. He lacks your fine Gallic common sense. He is half Irish, and they are a sentimental race. Stoker opened his mouth and snapped it shut again without speaking. Officially, he was the third son of the late Viscount Templeton Vane. Unofficially, he was the result of a passionate liaison between the Viscountess and the portraitist who had come from Galway to paint her in oils. Stoker did not generally enjoy discussing his parentage, but he could not now object unless he admitted to understanding French, and it was a situation I decided to exploit to the fullest. He is the same with his dogs, I went on. He lets them sleep in his bed, and he feeds them from his own plate.